So do you ever find yourself getting impatient? I was at the hardware store the other day, just before closing time. Thought it was maybe a good time to just sort of slip in and zip out real quick. Normally at this store, there are two tills with two people. This time there was just one. The teller was working solo. And there was a customer she was dealing with who had a grocery cart, like literally a grocery cart full of tools and gadgets. And for some reason, those tools and gadgets didn't just need to be scanned, they needed a manual adjustment on them, each one of them. I don't know what was going on. Anyways, when the teller saw me, she smiled at me, but she didn't pick up that phone, right? You know, and paging any customer service agent to come up to the front. She didn't do that. She was just too focused on the task at hand. Of course, I groaned internally. This is going to take forever. I was just going to go in, come back out. So I just stood there, tapping my feet, my frustration sort of beginning to boil. That is, until another person noticed me. Another worker noticed me, asked if I needed help. Well, yes, I do need help. Do you ever get impatient with other people? Do you ever get impatient with God? I mean, Joel mentioned young adults. Think of the different young adults, and I'm not talking about just young grads, but people going into their 30s who are looking to God for career direction. I mean, could be you. Unlike your best friend who always wanted to be a police officer, you've never had any real strong feelings about vocation. And it feels like you've been in this holding pattern for a decade. You still don't know what you're going to do when you grow up. Despite all your praying, God hasn't given you any clear indications, no message from the heavens. You're exploring a lot of possibilities, but are frustrated with the waiting. Or maybe you're half of a younger couple seeking God's help in getting pregnant. You both know that you want to be parents, and you're pretty sure that you'd be good at it. But while some couples only need to look at each other for a baby to be conceived, you've found it impossible. You've been to doctors and specialists, spent thousands of dollars on fertility treatments to no avail. God has put this desire in your heart, yet for some reason, unknown to you, you haven't conceived, and you're still waiting. You're waiting. Or maybe you've just entered into retirement for years. For years, you've been looking forward to the opportunity to spend more time with grandkids and invest in things that matter most to you. But the week after you've left your job, you hear from your doctor. Bad news. It's cancer. There's radiation, then surgery. Now the oncologist wants to go further. A dozen rounds of chemotherapy. You've been waiting for your retirement, right? And now you're waiting again. Or think about that elderly person stretched out on a bed in hospice. When they first arrived, they asked how long, and they were told, well, we think about a week. But the death is delayed. All that good care and life is stretching on. It's now 3 weeks later. They are tired. The family's tired. The person is ready to meet God, but God has yet to call them home. They are waiting. Waiting. Life with God can sometimes be rather frustrating. While we have learned to trust and depend on God, sometimes our faith is tested. Tested with long periods of waiting. Today we're continuing through our exploration of sort of the saints and sinners of the Old Testament, and we're peering into the life of Moses. The background to this story is that the Jewish people themselves have been waiting in Egypt for about 400 years. And just to get your mind around that, think of the founding of, if you've been to Quebec City, well, it was founded by Samuel de Champlain 400 years ago, right? Approximately. That's how long, think about those old buildings, right? That's how long the Jews were in Egypt. And for a significant portion of that time, they were living under political oppression. Moses comes onto the scene during a pogrom of a particularly ruthless Egyptian ruler in order to deal with a burgeoning population of foreigners. It was ordered that all male Jewish babies be killed, just the males. Due to a twist of faith, what we Christians call God's providence, an abandoned Moses is found and adopted by Pharaoh's daughter, and then his own mother is hired as his wet nurse. By God's action, Moses is spared an early death to receive both a good Jewish nurture and an outstanding Egyptian education to follow. Which brings us up to today's lesson. In today's lesson, we encounter Moses, a prince of Egypt, all growed up. According to the account that Stephen gives in Acts chapter 7, Moses is now 40 years old. Moses is 40. He's had his education among the Egyptians. He's lived in the palace. And he decides to take his place among his people. He wants to visit them and help them. I mean, he hasn't forgotten who he is, right? He's a Hebrew. So he wants to visit his people. He wants to help them. But it doesn't get off to a very good start. I mean, listen to this summary provided by one commentator. As Moses watches, he spots an Egyptian assaulting a Hebrew. Moses is filled with both compassion and rage. What is happening is not right. This abuse must stop. Now, it's easy to imagine Moses' train of thought. These Hebrews are my people. God has chosen me to deliver them. Now is the time to act. So Moses doesn't delay to contemplate what he should do. Rather, he jumps to the man's defense and kills the Egyptian who is beating him, and then hides the body in the sand. But Moses' reckless actions do not achieve his desired results. This becomes clear the very next day when Moses once again goes out to see his people. This time he encounters two Hebrews fighting. He steps in to break up the fight, saying, why are you hitting your fellow man, your fellow Hebrew? But instead of identifying Moses as a deliverer, the man in the wrong asks, who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me like you killed that Egyptian? Far from being perceived as an agent of justice and the deliverer of his people, the Hebrews see Moses as a rash meddler with a violent temper. As Stephen recounts in Acts, Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them, but they did not. Well, not only is Moses misunderstood by his own people, he is also soon the object of Pharaoh's wrath. When Pharaoh learns of the blood on Moses' hands, he wants this rebel dead. Moses must flee from Egypt to preserve his life. Now, Moses had thought the time was right. He was grown and educated. He was ready for action, ready to participate in the deliverance of his people. But God wasn't ready yet. Moses had to wait. Moses flees to Midian, where his passion for justice, helping some women trying to water their flock, is on this occasion rewarded. He is received warmly by the locals. He finds a wife and gets a job taking care of his in-laws' sheep. Quite the life change for a prince of Egypt who is expecting just to be parachuted into leadership. But keep in mind that this wasn't just a momentary interruption. I mean, we just read through the passage like it just happens right there, right? Well, the passage notes that Moses' exile was a long period, okay? Stephen, in his account in Acts, talks of it as being another 40 years. Another 40 years. Moses is in Midian, another 40 years, waiting another 40 years. That Moses never really settled into the new land can be seen in the name he gives to his first son, Gershom. Gershom's name means, I have become a foreigner in a foreign land. Now imagine what Moses was thinking as 1 year piled upon another. I mean, he turns 50 at his birthday party. I mean, what's God doing? He turns 60. What's happened to God's promises? He turns 80. Why am I wasting my time here? Well, as our story shows, this time isn't wasted. If you look a little more closely, you'll note that those intervening years were necessary for the accomplishment of God's plans. I mean, we see a change in that period of time in the life of Israel. For the first time in the story, we are told that the people of Israel start crying out. They engage in public outcry and name their oppression for the slavery it is. Those sparring Jews that Moses had interrupted years earlier, they weren't looking for a leader. They weren't looking for a deliverer. But as the times had changed, as the situation proved darker, the people start longing for something new. We see a change in the life of Israel. And we see a change in the life of Egypt. We are told that during the long period when Moses was in exile, that the king of Egypt died. All to say that the one who had put the hit on Moses was now out of power. Someone else would take the throne. Someone else was put in authority for the implementation of God's plan. Someone that Moses could approach when God would send him. We see a change in the life of Israel. We see a change in the life of Egypt. And we can really only imagine significant change in the life of Moses himself. I mean, think of it. When Moses first came to observe his people, he was a self-confident man in a position of privilege. He was a prince of Egypt going to parachute in and lead his people. But in the decades that have passed, Moses himself has learned what it's like to live in exile. He was always an insider in Pharaoh's courts. Now he knows what it's like to be a true person of Israel, to be in exile. Moses, the prince of Egypt, has also learned how to make a living. I mean, watching sheep for his father-in-law. Think of the training school that is involved there. And then we learn that Moses becomes a husband and a father. Well, the academies of Egypt can't compare to what an education as a father brings you, can it? During those wasted years in Midian, God has been busy accomplishing God's purposes. The Israelites, Egypt, and Moses are all now ready for the unveiling of God's redemption plans. Everyone is prepared. Read on further, you find that God is ready to act. We tend to get impatient when we need to wait for anything. I mean, just picking up a few things at the hardware store. Our faith gets tested. Our faith gets tested when we bring things before God and things don't happen when we want them or as we had planned. Doesn't God hear me? Why hasn't God answered my prayer? Well, what today's text reminds us is that God is always busy working out God's purposes. Even in times that we think are being wasted, God is preparing us in the world for God's redemptive acts. Well, may God give us peace even as we wait for God's answers. Amen and amen.